Welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave. I'm here with Joel and Tony, and we're talking about a couple of movies today because it's Oscar season, but it's also Razzie season. So we thought we'd take one of each. And so we're going to talk about first The Shape of Water, nominated for an Oscar, several awards, an amazing movie, I'm going to say right off the bat. And then we're going to talk about Baywatch, which may also be an amazing movie as well. But first, The Shape of Water. Tony, Joel, what did you guys think of The Shape of Water?
I loved it. I love Guillermo del Toro movies, but I think that this particular Guillermo del Toro movie kind of soared beyond my expectations and painted a really fascinating narrative that I was not expecting. And it just had some really fascinating characters, too, that just made the movie from start to finish just very, very interesting, like a lean-in, thoughtful, and intense movie, the kind of movie that Guillermo del Toro does. But
I agree. Yeah. It took you off the path that you walk in with some notions about how a movie might go, and it didn't allow you to stay on the track very long, and every time you thought you discovered what track you're on, it took you to another direction, and I thought it was an original movie in most cases.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think that it uses a trope like the E.T. kind of, well, this is a strange thing. Like, there are going to be minor spoilers ahead. We'll try to be mindful of it. But the sense that there's an amphibious man that is being studied, and the powers that be, the government man in the U.S., want to take it apart, and they want to dissect it, and they think that that's going to yield the best results for their science. And it'll also keep, you know, the Russians from getting it, because this is Cold War America in the 60s. And that's kind of a framework for something we've heard, a story we've heard. But then there's also an artist who was working with a janitor that is cleaning up in this room. And there's this level of compassion with the amphibious man that totally unexpected, but it is the centerpiece of the movie. And I mean, aside from a lot of Guillermo del Toro's movies do this, but it's a very impressionistic movie where there's symbols and colors that are very striking. This movie plays off of that. But then at the same time, there's these tensions that are very overt in the scene, you know, between the janitorial staff and, say, the government administrator.
Scientists.
Yeah, the scientists even, yeah.
I think it was Guillermo del Toro doing a period piece. Like, oh, my God. The design of the thing was fantastic. From the science lab with the screens and the dials, you know, looks like it's straight out of Apollo 13. Mm. The theater downstairs and the apartment building and all of these things really gave you a sense of place is something that we say a lot. It gave you a sense of place. But, you know, more than that, it's almost like the time period was a character in this movie. Mm. It's like, remember a time when telephones rang and you didn't know who it was. And remember a time when you were on the bus and you didn't have your phone to occupy you. Mm-hmm. And you had to look at the stars or take a nap or something like that. And the design of the cars, the design of the wardrobe, the design of the sets was fantastic in this movie, as they were in Crimson Peak, as they were in Pan's Labyrinth, as they were in so many of his movies. Mm-hmm. So that's a treat all by itself. If you're just looking for a period film to watch, like, this is one to check out. And the acting is phenomenal. I feel like that sentence I've said on every podcast for the past 3 months, the acting is phenomenal, but here it's captivating because the main character is mute. She cannot speak. She can hear, but she does sign. And so everything is about her face, how her emotions, all has to be communicated with facial expressions. And boy, does she deliver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sally Hawkins, she had a presence, like a definitive presence. You always knew how she felt, and it drove a lot of the movie. You know, just watching her reaction and even the scenes, as you mentioned, the bus scene was magical to me, with the rain coming onto the window, and you could see what she was thinking about, and you could just kind of get in her head. Even though she wasn't speaking, you could honestly just see what was going on inside of her. I thought that was great.
Yeah, what a thing to say is that the bus scene is memorable. It's just her riding on a bus, but
and it rained.
And it rained.
But it was great.
That's a scene that sticks out in this movie, along with so many. And then that contrasted with the amphibious man, who was not given a name. I think IMDb literally calls him the amphibious man. He had to emote so much with his body language. There was an actor in that costume, in that makeup, and the face was a little bit static. He had some gill action on the side of his face that they would articulate. But otherwise, it was how he stood. And sometimes it was imposing, and sometimes it was vulnerable. And
eyelid movement, too, I believe.
Eyelid movement. Yeah. And, you know, the his breathing was a major part of his presence, of his character's mental state, whether he was breathing easily or whether he was not breathing easily or whether he was gasping. Mm-hmm. These things were all key to this. Who was the Giles? Was it Richard Jenkins, right? Is that his name? The artist next door?
I believe so, yeah.
I adore him and everything he's in. I love Step Brothers, where he's the father of the two men. And in this, he played a character that was the personification of the movie. Someone who is wistful and idealistic and at the same time kind of afraid, kind of lonely. This movie is all about loneliness, mm-hmm. the loneliness of the characters, at least those three characters, mm-hmm. if not more, if not, you know, the loneliness Zelda feels in her own house with her husband who, you know, at best ignores her, at worst, you know, mistreats her. You know, the loneliness of our protagonist and our amphibious man and of the artist next door, of the business owner downstairs who can't get anyone to buy a ticket to his theater. Mm-hmm. It's all about loneliness all throughout. Michael Shannon goes home on several scenes, and you see his family, and it's like they're not even there. It's just like him as a rock, and they're just like waves splashing around the room. They're not even, don't seem like a part of his life. It seems like he is his own man, and they are just around.
Well, and he almost creates his own loneliness.
Right.
Through his demeanor, also through some repellence of his physical body.
Oh, yeah.
That was just I hate to say a microcosm, but that was, to me, the putrefaction of his inner being.
Yes, solar.
Yeah. Was on display.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas, it's also a product of that time, was like his whole, one of the most animated and colorful scenes of the whole movie of his was the scene where he buys a Cadillac, mm-hmm. you know? And it was like all this soundbite kind of slogan, the Cadillac is the car of the future, and you are the man of the future.
You are the man of the future.
I think he even says that, yeah. I don't know. I just thought that was a great moment where it's kind of like he is more his suit and his material kind of like idea of who he is than anybody. Like he's, you know, a little hollow in
right.
that way.
This is how things should be. Mm-hmm. So therefore, this is how I am.
Yeah. Yes. And there's the line he says that, you know, I don't fail. Like I deliver.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember verbatim, but.
Yeah. When he's talking to the 5-star
mm-hmm.
general.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So much of this movie is about character work between two characters, which I will contrast later on in the podcast, but it's people finding ways to connect. How do you connect with a fish man in a tank, you know? Turns out food and music is how this character chose to interact. Mm-hmm. How do you interact with the artist next door? Oh, television mm-hmm. is a way to interact. Movies, old movies
dancing.
Is a way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Old movies played a huge part in this movie mm-hmm. As a thing where people are brought together, a thing that was fascinating, a thing that was compelling. It's kind of a love letter to old films, I think, mm-hmm, is mm-hmm. to have them showing on TV. I did like that the children in Michael Shannon's family watched television as opposed to movies. I thought that was mm-hmm. an interesting switch. Like maybe, you know, they are the future. They're not about, you know, old movies with grand sets and big dance numbers. They're mm-hmm. about, I forget what he said they wanted to watch, but, you know, a TV show.
Right. What does this technology bring to you? Does it allow you to revel in the days of yore or in the true art form, or does it allow you to, you know, partake in what syndicated, mm-hmm. you know, short-term memory span kind of things now? But they're using the same piece of technology, so to speak, with the TV,
mm-hmm. right?
But for different purposes.
Right,
yeah. Well, and I think it's kind of representative of, like, again, that consumer culture versus something that's maybe a little bit more internal and maybe some of the larger narratives of the time being expressed in like these grandiose films mm-hmm. or I wanted to even step back and you mentioned how loneliness was kind of a key factor, whereas this was bringing people together and this was like a kind of a narrative that bound various diverse, you know, people together. And, but I also wanted to bring up that like part of the loneliness was also they were small people and they were afraid, you know, they were,
mm-hmm.
janitorial staff who had everything to fear in this larger institution. And he was an artist that wasn't going to get paid if he didn't do exactly what they wanted and didn't revolutionize his art, you know, when he was just creating stills of these pies and things like that, you know. Not to mention, you know, he had like a romantic feelings towards the diner, the young mm-hmm. guy at the diner. So it was like,
right.
there was all this, he didn't really have a place in the world. So I think like
they all had these common shared things inside them that they couldn't quite express, you know? Yet it brought them together through these narratives and through...
Right, they became, in their way, they were a family. However strange or, you know, various connections might have been. And it looked at the nuclear family as something that was not working correctly in this particular film. And it's just the common conception of family, you know, I think that was a strong statement by this film that maybe family is, it can be anyone you want it to be, not necessarily what it should be.
Sure. Yeah. And as I think about that now, I realize when our protagonist, when Eliza takes a risk, that's when her family shows up for her, right? People she didn't may not have even realized were her family. She had to beg Giles to join in, but once other people realized that she was making herself vulnerable by taking this risk, people came to her aid. And, you know, you found out, you know, maybe she is not so alone. She feels alone, but she has these people that are willing to risk, you know, their jobs, their livelihood for her. Anything else about The Shape of Water that struck you? I mean, there are some gorgeous scenes that I don't want to describe because I don't think I do a very good job of of just telling you about these scenes. You should go see it for yourself. It is worthy of an Oscar nomination, absolutely, because it's gorgeous and it's well acted and, you know, it's provocative. It's pulling all these feelings that we have forward to have a discussion like this.
And I don't want to sound condescending, but I'm proud that the Oscars nominated this film as well as others that again go outside the box a little bit. They push boundaries, maybe blend genres a little bit. And I think that this film, you could oversimplify it and say, oh, at times during the movie I was thinking, well, this is the creature from the Black Lagoon meeting Hidden Figures or something like that. But there's so much more to it. Guillermo del Toro is a maestro when it comes to, and I've said it before, telling stories that have meaning and that resonate. And this resonated a lot.
So we all agree. I think it is a great film. If you're interested in more of Guillermo del Toro's work, come to the library. We got Crimson Peak. We got Pan's Labyrinth. We got Pacific Rim. We got...
I wanted to mention Kronos. It's one of his early Mexican films that got published a little bit later in America. And it's, so I think it's one of the first ones. I really liked it, kind of horror elements in that one, too.
He helped write a novel series, too, right? The Strain.
The Strain.
So
plenty of his work here at the library to check out. But moving on from our Oscar nominee to our Razzie nominee. If you don't know, the Golden Raspberry Award is given to bad movies and bad actors. I believe the night before the Oscars is when it's traditionally held.
Who are good at bad acting, right? Or bad at good acting.
Yeah, one or the other. It's sometimes it's hard to say. But we decided to, on the one hand, have a little contrast with The Shape of Water. But on the other hand, keep it kind of the same with the water theme. We saw Baywatch, which is on the shelves now at Des Plaines Public Library. I'm going to take the reins on this one. I thought this movie was hilarious. I liked it a lot. I didn't love it. I don't think it's going to provide the same provocative internal stories that we just shared over Shape of Water, but I thought it was a funny movie, and I haven't seen a funny movie in a while. What did you guys think?
I agree with you. Just as a note, it was nominated for 3 Razzies for Worst Actor, Zac Efron, Worst Picture, and Worst Remake, Ripoff, or Sequel.
Yeah.
But I do think that... strangely, it was surprisingly good. I laughed a lot, and I enjoyed most of it, and even the awkward parts, which, I mean, it's Baywatch. It's the film I cringed about even thinking about watching, probably, you know, through the 10 years that it was running. I didn't realize it had run that long, but I'm happy I saw it. I actually would end up recommending it to people if they were in the mood for something funny, you know?
If you're in the mood for something funny, that's vital,
Yeah.
On a couple different levels, I found it funny. It had a lot of great comedic elements, and the other parts of it, they were just inconsistent with what they were trying to do in the movie, or not what they were trying to do. They just didn't care. And they would set you up for something and completely forget about it by the end of the movie. And to me, that was funny as well. I was like, I can't believe they're just chucking this character out or, you know, mixing this in. And but I agree. There was a lot of laugh moments.
The plot is terrible. I think we can all agree on that.
Yes. Oh, gosh.
The plot... on its face, is the worst.
It's laughable.
It is laughable. That's true. It's contrived. It's the same plot you've seen on a TV mm-hmm. show, in a movie, 100 times before.
Except, like, more over the top.
Yeah, there's a hand-wringing bad guy who has a dark plan, and our unlikely team of ragtag heroes have to rise to save the day. And it hits all of those notes, even. Like, mm-hmm. there are gruesome executions, and there are moments of disbelief, you know. Dwayne Johnson, who plays Mitch, who is called Mitch. There's also a CJ.
Stephanie Holden.
Uh-huh. Those are the only characters I know from the TV show. Mitch and CJ. I don't know if there was a Summer or not in the TV show, but there was a Summer in the movie. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he's trying to convince Zac Efron's character that, well, there's a drug ring and we need to bust this. And Zac Efron's like, no, you call the police is what you do. And you know, that was funny. I thought that was a great exchange. That was a moment of self-awareness. But then, no, they trudge ahead and try to break up the drug ring. And it's like, oh, like, this is still Baywatch, right?
Yeah. It's like, so you don't call the police in this instance?
No. Like a horror movie. Like, you run out of the house, right?
Right.
You call the police.
Yeah, you would do things differently in real life.
But. Yeah, but the campy and the camp was, like, so real and so self-aware.
Yes.
I kind of compare this to, like, I don't know. Napoleon Dynamite wasn't as self-aware. It was kind of campy, but I feel like there were elements of it that was, this is like a raunchy rated R version of that in some ways, but then it just took the camp and like raised it to 11 because it was just like, there were some scenes where I feel like the Zac Efron with like standing opposite Dwayne Johnson, like their banter was so good that it just kept going.
Yes.
And they just didn't care. And they knew that that was one of the funny things of this film. So they kept going with it. But there were other moments when like David Hasselhoff, you know,
mm-hmm.
and
I think we can
totally
say
hilarious.
Shows up for no reason,
yeah,
and then disappears. And
exactly. Well, I think it's like
it's just weird and funny.
Contractually obligated to show up in anything Baywatch related,
right?
But they could have worked it in a little better,
right?
Yeah, it was quite jarring.
Than just like, excuse me, I'm here now, and no one saw him come in the room. That was anyway. Mm-hmm. He's a little supernatural, I guess, is the edge they wanted to give him.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel if you have the right attitude towards this movie, it can be funny. It's certainly not something that's going to challenge you. I don't think it's the funniest movie I've seen in a while. I think 21 Jump Street is 10 times as funny as Baywatch. But I do think that Baywatch is not bad. Worst movie of the year? That would surprise me, especially when it's up against Transformers 4 and The Emoji Movie.
Mm-hmm.
The Mummy, I can't imagine Baywatch is worse than those movies. It's not so bad. It's actually kind of funny. There is character work, as I said, where two characters are trying to get along. And when it's Dwayne and when it's Zach, it's great. And when it's any other two pairs of people, it is not good. It is a 5-minute snoozer. I watched this movie as I was getting ready for work in the morning, actually. And there were times when I'd be like, I'm going to go clean some dishes and come back to this movie. And I did, and I missed nothing, and I came back, and there was another funny scene, and I had a good time. So I don't know about a theater viewing of this movie. If you missed it in the theater, you probably made the right decision. But I would recommend renting it. I had a good time. I was surprised by the director.
Yeah.
Has some interesting credits, including King of Kong, the documentary about the men who compete for the highest score in Donkey Kong.
That's a lovely film. It's an awesome
film. It's an awesome film. And so I was kind of delighted to see that he's still getting work and mm-hmm. big budget work at that. He must have gotten paid a lot of money to direct Baywatch. So good for him. On the other hand, you know, Baywatch is Baywatch. It's kind of what you expect.
Yeah,
I think the first scene, the very first scene should have been Dwayne The Rock Johnson jumping over a shark in a jet ski, and then that just sets up, we've already jumped the shark. It's downhill from here, folks.
Well, when the movie title mm-hmm. came on screen, it did flip a few dolphins off of it.
So. Yeah,
that was kind of the signal. Like, if you're expecting anything more, you best leave now.
Well, and one of the story was helped created by Thomas Lennon, who mm-hmm. is Reno 911,
mm-hmm.
and if you go all the way back to MTV's The State,
mm-hmm.
He's always had a very offbeat sense of humor. When I saw his name in the credits, I was looking forward more so than I had been before of watching this movie.
I think the jokes hit, but nothing else does.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about the characters. I don't care. Like, the romances are telegraphed from a million miles away.
Mm-hmm.
how they're going to end up at the end. You say the jokes are good, fine. What else is good about this movie? Nothing. It's all the same shot of people on the beach.
Right.
You know, and it's not interesting sets. Mm-hmm. It's not interesting costume design. They're all in the same red bathing suits.
If you like mussels, I think it would be good.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
You know, because there's a lot of that. And again, self-referential. Mm-hmm. The slow motion running. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this show always.
Yeah, they referred to the slow motion running. They referred to the TV show at one point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's got nothing else going for it. The jokes are good, though. A-plus work on making it funny. Mm-hmm. But. And whatever, I'll forget it in a month. And
there were moments where I was trying to figure out, is this, you know, going into it, the Baywatch show happened in California. Mm-hmm. Going into it, they showed the early morning, the beginning of a day, mm-hmm. and the sun rising over the water. I'm like, well, mm-hmm. that's not California then.
It's so, not the West Coast.
Is it in Florida? Like, where? And obviously, they never talk about exactly where it is, mm-hmm. but I realized at that point, like, 3 minutes into the movie to, okay, stop.
Yes.
If you're paying attention to stuff like that, then you need to just stop because,
yeah.
you know, turn off that part of your brain
yeah.
and just watch moving figures interact mm. with each other and mm. listen to the banter and the lines. So, because mm. that's, it was really inconsistent in a lot of spots mm-hmm. where they would develop relationships at the beginning and then not care about them at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, some of the characters don't even have very strong relationships with anyone. Like, even, like, Mitch, I thought that Dwayne Johnson as the actor like brings some class to that role in the sense that he's really a goody two-shoes character, but he's got like a rough wrestling guy exterior. Mm-hmm. So the only really way he can express it though in this film is basically to pick on Zac Efron's character, which is right. all in good taste. Like we said, it's really funny, but it's just funny because he's a good guy. I mean, he's like a good guy to the core where he wants to solve the problems of this bay, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, that's about it, though. Like, what else does he have?
Right. And there are other characters where they expose some serious issues with the character. Zac Efron has a mm-hmm. trouble with alcohol. Mm-hmm. And they really don't care about that problem. It's just at the end, they just kind of, you know, what reference to be, oh, that one? Don't worry about that. Right. Now we're doing this. You know, Stephanie Holden's character of being passed over, I'm sure that she had a big axe to grind, but she was there for the... Again, we could just stop with the character examination because there is, as you were saying, there's...
If any.
And then even the interaction I'm remembering now between Dwayne Johnson and Zac Efron, it's straight out of Scrubs, right? It's nothing new. It's Dr. Cox and JD all over again, calling them boy band names instead of girls' names and mm-hmm. just relentless picking on the new guy mm-hmm. because you're trying to shape him. Like, you know, they just stole that bit from Scrubs and it's mm-hmm. the best part of the movie. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Should you rent Baywatch? I think so. If you're looking for some laughs, it's funny. If you're looking for anything else, then no.
Yeah. I'm always a big proponent on reviewing a movie on two scores. You know, one, the critical, and the other one is the fun factor. Did I have fun watching this film?
Sure.
In this winter where we live in the Midwest and we have snow and it was just fun to watch sunshine and sand and surf. Mm-hmm. I had a good time watching that, so...
Yeah, I had a good time. I had a good time watching it.
In fact, there's a point where Hasselhoff gives him beef for wearing shoes.
Yeah,
and I can't stand wearing shoes. I'm like, all right, yeah, that's
that was funny.
Wearing shoes.
Yeah, that was a good joke.
Yeah.
Well, and also, I mean, I think I have in my notes, like, is this a remake of a dead show that should have remained in its grave? And I don't think, no, I think, like, sometimes you're bringing something back and you're actually adding to it, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like it's adding to what was there. And I don't know. I can't speak to what Baywatch used to be. This probably has very little to do with the original show besides all the references. But it was apparently a loved show internationally. I don't really know much beyond that. It ran for 10 years.
It's a huge success internationally. Yeah.
I remember putting it on my calendar to watch when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Like, this show looks great. And it was right off of Hasselhoff. Being, you know, Knight Rider.
Right.
Yeah. And, oh, come on. Everything this guy touches is golden.
Yeah.
And my brother and I, we loved watching that show. And then after 2-3 years, we're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So just it was the same show all over
yeah.
at the time. So
And then this movie, the plot is the same show over. It's mm-hmm. it's another criminal plot to take over the bay. Mm-hmm. And the lifeguards.
Who knew that, like, a place of recreation would have so much crime and corruption and evil going on?
It's that same, that South Park episode where it's, you know, they're trying to buy the youth center and turn it into a hotel. And so the kids have to get in a skiing competition. It's that same story. Like even, you know, South Park and Simpsons have already made fun of it. Mm-hmm. It's over. Like, don't try to do it again. But the jokes are good. The interaction between Dwayne Johnson and Zac Efron, I've said it twice now, I'll say it three times, it's really good. Mm. But that's it. The interaction between any other two actors, including Dwayne Johnson and Zac Efron, is not so funny. So luckily, there's a lot of that. Maybe this movie was saved in editing. They're like, you know, this stuff is really funny, so let's make sure we put as much of it in as possible.
Mm. So. Oh, yeah, and it certainly earns its place among the Razzie nominations.
I think so. If it wins, I'll be disappointed. Mm. I can't imagine it's the worst movie of the year. But among the worst movies of the year, maybe. Maybe.
Honorable mention.
Honorable mention, at least, to Baywatch.
Well, and to the Razzies' credit, I mean, the movies that have made it, it's a short list. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, obviously, it's how you organize it. But we're lucky that the Oscar list is much longer than the Razzie list.
So I don't know. I don't think Baywatch will win a Razzie, but Shape of Water might win an Oscar. That's how I feel about our picks. Any final feelings about Baywatch? I think watching it at an arm's length, as I did, is the way to do it. You know, don't invest yourself. If you can only pick up one movie today at the library, don't pick up Baywatch.
Right, pick this one up too.
Get something else. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Get this one just in case you got some extra time that you weren't planning.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for the Pint and Click podcast. We'll see you next time.